Intervju Radija Študent.
Lepo pozdravljeni v intervjuju Ereš, oziroma v terminu Ereš intervjuja. Ura je 18:10, v katerem danes gostimo izjemnega glasbenika, imenovanega Dan Deacon, ki bo danes oziroma nocoj prvič nastopil v Sloveniji. In sicer v klubu K4, ter ne v Menzi pred Korito, kot je bilo sprva napovedano. In to omenjam zgolj zato, ker se ta dezinformacija še vedno pojavlja na nekaterih spletnih straneh. Sedaj pa kar k intervjuju. Hi, Dan.
Hello.
You just started your new tour 2 days ago, our first two shows, and traveling to Ljubljana.
They were great.
Yeah?
Yeah. Is it really all it's been, is two shows?
Prague and Bucharest.
Yeah, that's it. That's crazy. I feel like I've been on tour for like 1,000 years.
Wow, that's a great feeling. I envy you this. So you're playing this tour all by yourself?
Yeah, this is a solo tour. Uh-huh. And it's the first time I've been traveling alone in a long time. It's funny that this song is the one on in the background. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah, this song is about me and my ex-girlfriend who just broke up and...
You wrote this song after you broke up?
No, I wrote it while we were still going out, about like some hard times we were having. And it's an emotional song for me.
It's a very emotional song for me too. Tell me, so how does your life setup looks like when you're playing solo tours?
Well, I play in the crowd,
yeah,
traditionally, and I have like a table.
Synthesizers, effects.
I've got like a Casio keyboard and a lot of effects pedals and an oscillator and vocoder.
Banana iPods.
I got rid of the banana. No more banana.
Okay, but you have iPod.
I do.
So this is pretty similar to your Spider-Man of the Rings tour back in 2007, which you also played alone.
Yeah, I'd say it's the tour that I have most done. I've only done one non-solo tour, or two, I guess, one in the States and one in
Europe,
in like Western Europe.
Yeah. After the release of your latest album, Bronzed, you played, as you mentioned, some show with big ensemble with lots of live instrument. What happened with that band?
It still exists.
Uh-huh.
It's just really expensive to take that many people over here.
Yeah, logistical nightmare.
Yeah, that's the artwork I work with. The realm of creation is logistical nightmare.
Okay. Bronzed is your first album with a lot of acoustical sounds on it. Was it like a deliberate decision to put all the xylophones, drums, pianos and other stuff on it?
Yeah, I think I've always written for those sort of instruments, but I was always frustrated with how they sounded with MIDI.
Yeah.
And I never had the means to record them properly until Bronzed. So once Bronzed came out, I took all these pieces that I had been working on and tried to realize them as true to their natural state as possible. The next record will be entirely live instruments and live electronics.
Really?
There won't be any sequencing and nothing will be non-human.
Okay, so how do you play songs from Bronzed on this solo tour? Do you play samples of acoustical instruments or...?
Yeah, I play... My part is exactly the same if I'm with the ensemble or not.
Or not,
My parts never change. It's just instead of it being 15 people, it's reduced into like a pre-sequenced track on an iPod.
Cool.
Which is a lot easier to get on an airplane.
Yeah. How did composing music for the Bronzed look like? Did you use all the instruments that are on the record, or did you just wrote down scores and went to studio with them and then recorded them in studio?
It depends. Some of the players wanted sheet music and notation, so I gave them sheet music. Other people played by ear. It varied from player to player.
Mm-hmm.
Like most of the drummers, like some of the drummers wanted sheet music, some of the drummers just wanted to play by ear. The mallet players wanted sheet music. I guess most people wanted sheet music, come to think of it.
Mm-hmm.
For the ensemble tour, though, just about half of the people wanted sheet music. The other people just wanted just their tracks isolated so they could like figure their parts out.
So how do you write music? Do you make MIDI tracks of all these real instruments?
I mainly do it in MIDI. I used to write by hand, but I found it to be a really tedious process, and I'd like to go back to it because I feel like my skills have diminished since I've stopped. But, yeah, I mainly do everything within the computer.
Cool. Did you use different approach to compose music for Brahms compared to your previous more electronic albums?
Yeah, I guess so. I don't know. It wasn't really so much of a cognizant effort, though. I was writing Brahms and Spider-Man of the Rings around the same time, except for like some of the later tracks, like Snookered, the one we're listening to now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought about it a little differently. I thought about it sounding more. I don't know. It's hard for me to go back and think about it since it was not so long ago, but I've been working on new stuff now for a while, and it seems like, like I said, this tour's been 2 days and it feels like 1,000 years. I feel like I recorded Brahms like 4 lifetimes ago.
Okay. People trying to describe your music with words have quite a big problem doing it. There's all sorts of terms around, from absurdism to modern classical music, but the most common word used, I think, is youthful. And for me personally, you're like Peter Pan who refuses to grow up. How would you describe your music?
I would say that's pretty accurate. I think there's definitely a youthful nature to the released work. I mean, a lot of it revolves around like euphoria and celebratory sort of ideas, and you know, I came up playing mainly in like the party scene. Like house parties and warehouse shows and stuff like that. So that's sort of the background where I came from. And those, I like keeping it positive. And even like, I mean, this is probably my saddest song, and it's still like 75% major chords.
Yeah. Okay, let's go on. On your MySpace profile, you said that Devo is a band that influences your music. I don't know, as you might heard, members of Devo, together with Walt Disney Company, created a band called Devo 2.
Oh yeah, I have heard that.
With really young kids performing original Devo songs. What do you think about this kind of approach?
I think it's a great idea.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay. I think it was Mark Motherbaugh, Devo, who said in an interview that they started this Devo 2 project because they felt that back in the 80s the technology wasn't advanced enough. So it was in 2006 when they re-recorded all their songs with modern technology, allowing them to make the music sound the way that they wanted to back in the day.
I think he's full of crap.
Do you ever feel limited by the technology? Is it possible that you'll re-record your stuff in, let's say, 20 years when the technology advances?
If I become as money-loving and bitter as Devo, then yeah, I probably will. I mean, I love their music, but those guys have like 25 greatest hits records that have the exact same I can't listen to this song again. Is there any way we could just
just play the next one? Okay.
No, I don't think I'll go back and re-record. I mean, only if I were, I don't know, maybe. Who wants to predict the future?
Okay.
I mean, I'd like to go back and record maybe Pink Batman from Spider-Man of the Rings on, like, you know, actual guitar and harpsichord and organ. I think that would sound nice, but I'd rather focus my energies on new work rather than going back and retweaking old work.
Okay.
I mean, that's what, like, don't you wish George Lucas would just focus on making a good new Star Wars movie instead of like going back and ruining the old ones?
Sure. Do you think your music has a therapeutic effect in terms of psychological trauma on people who listen to your music?
I don't think so.
No.
But some people email me saying that it really helps them get through hard times, or that like it's like very uplifting for them, and that always feels good, you know, to get like an email where someone's like, thanks. You know what I mean? It just makes you feel like you're doing something right.
Has anyone ever said to you something like, I was, I don't know, raped by a Catholic priest when I was 7 years old, my life was ruined, and then I heard your music and now I feel this never happened?
No.
No, okay.
And please don't email me that.
Okay.
Talk to a professional. I'm just some dickhead. I don't know if I can curse on the... Hello.
Okay. Your previous album, Spider-Man of the Rings, was really a turning point for you. Do you think it's because you changed the label, or it's just because the song Crystal Cat, which is a really amazing song, or what do you think is the reason behind it?
I think it was a combination of things. I think it was having a label that had, like, you know, promotion and publicist and helped expose me to a larger audience. It was my first, like, full-length record that was pretty vocal-based and more focused than my earlier experimental, sort of all-over-the-place student records. And I'd been touring a lot at that point, and there, I think there was a slight buzz about me. So when the larger media like Pitchfork picked up on it, it was easy for it to just plume and explode. I think it was a combination of the right material and the being at the right place at the right time.
Okay. There are some websites that consider Spider-Man of the Rings and Brahms like your first and second album. Do you feel offended because of it?
No,
that
no.
They just ignore your previous work?
I understand where they're coming from. Like, okay. they're my first like commercially released records. The other records are impossible to find. They don't... I mean, the first...
In what quantities are we talking about? Were these albums released? Like 100, 500?
Yeah, between 500 and 1,000. I would like... They were like handmade CDRs that I started making in 2002 until 2006 or 2007. But you can't... I mean, they're not in print currently.
Is there going to be a reprint of it? Or
yeah, I think I'm going to put them out. A lot of people keep asking for Needle Mice, especially on vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to put them out. Just, you know, again, like a short, limited run, nothing big, but I think it'd be cool.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm going to re-record them with Children on new instruments because the technology I had developed.
Okay. When Brahms was released about a year ago, I really hope there's going to be one of my favorite your songs on it. I think it's called Silence Like Wind Overtakes Me.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to be on your next album?
I don't know what's going to happen with that song. Sometimes I think that it should only exist in the live setting.
Oh.
But I'll probably make like a 7-inch of it or something. I've been saying that for a long time. I should just get it over with and do it.
Is it already recorded?
No, I've never. No. I've never. Well, I started recording it for Brahmst, but it just didn't fit Brahmst. Like, there's nowhere on that record where that song would go, and it wouldn't just sound like a single stuck in there. I didn't want Brahmst to have any sort of like a song that sounded like a single that would like lead the record. I wanted it. I wanted it to be more of like an album that everything was on like the same sort of plane. Which is why I think it was a... I don't know where I'm going with that.
Okay, just release the 7-inch and I'll be happy.
Cool.
But since you were mentioning the flow of the Brahms, there's a very interesting vocal song on it called Wet Wings. Can you tell me more about it?
Sure. That's the oldest track on the record. It's an old traditional folk tune.
Japanese or Chinese?
No. It's I'm pretty sure it's like it's definitely American. I think it's Irish American.
Really?
Yeah. It's one of the later alternate verses. The lyrics are to "Amazing Grace," so it's just that track unaltered, layered on top of itself like 300 times, just like starting at like different rates. It's sort of like a digital sort of chorale, which adds for the phasing and like the smear sort of sound that occurs.
Cool. A lot of your song titles refer to animals, you know, tracks like Lion with the Shark's Head, Snake Mistakes, Woody Woodpecker, and so on, so on, so on, so on. Where does your obsession with animal come from?
The beasts are great. Gotta love the beasts.
Yeah? How come? Did you watch a lot of cartoons?
I did watch a lot. I'm not sure how you thought that, but I did. I did watch. I don't know. I think when you describe something and compare it to an animal, it has a lot of, you know, preconceived notions and information attached to it.
Yeah.
So, it, you know, an animal's similar to a color. I mean, does that make sense?
Yeah, in a way. I'll think about it after the interview and then I'll tell you.
Well, if I call something like a, you know, never mind, I don't know. Animals are cool, I like animals.
Sure.
You gotta love animals. Who doesn't like animals?
Unless they're trying to kill and eat you.
Unless they need to.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
I've been known to eat some beasts. I love these beasts, but ooh, tasty birds, tasty fish.
Okay, get it.
But I don't want to be eaten.
Sure, nobody wants to be
eaten. But Circle of Life, dude. You ever see The Lion King?
Okay, the next question is the chicken and the egg kind of philosophical question. Trippy Green Skull. What was first, the song or the actual Trippy Green Skull?
The actual Trippy Green Skull.
Where'd you get it? At flea market or something?
No, I got it at a supermarket. Safeway supermarket on 25th Street in Baltimore. And as soon as I saw it, I was like, I have to buy it. I was dead broke at the time, and it was like $12. And I was like, groceries for the next 2 weeks, or the skull. And I was like, the skull. So I bought the skull, and I brought it home. And at first, I just put a regular light bulb in it.
Yeah.
Because it had like a little tiny one. I put a bright one in there. And it didn't look that cool. And then I started like flicking the light on and off, and my roommate had a strobe light, so I took his strobe light apart and oh, those cars sound cool. and that was the birth of the Trippy Green Skull.
Cool. Tell me more about Baltimore. I've never been to States, never been to Baltimore. The only thing I know about Baltimore is that you come from Baltimore, and I'm a big fan of this TV show called, you know, The Wire.
The Wire.
So tell me, how does the real Baltimore look like? Is it...
It looks similar to that. I mean, that show is definitely exaggerated and played up a little bit. It doesn't bring up a lot of the good parts of Baltimore.
Yeah.
But... I'm not going to talk. I've only seen like 4 episodes of The Wire, so I'm not
okay.
talking about The Wire.
Okay.
But the music scene is awesome there. There's a lot of really good bands there. The community is really diverse, yet still connected and interwoven.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bands like
Beach House
and yeah. Nautical Almanac are like in the same sort of realm and scene. And you know, bands like Ponytail, Future Islands, DJ Dog Dick, Jana Hunter, or Lower Dens. It's just a really good group, and it has a really strong community aspect to it. There's a lot of support, and even though that a lot of the bands don't sound very similar, there's definitely a unified sort of drive, which is to just create the best work possible.
Do you still organize any warehouse parties?
Oh yeah. I book this festival annually in July called Wartscape, and this will be the 5th year. I think it's going to be the largest of the 5.
Who's going to be headlining? You and?
I'll be playing. I don't want to. We haven't announced any of the bands yet.
We're
waiting, but it'll be cool.
Cool.
Yeah, we were playing all the ones that just bring me back. I haven't heard this song in forever.
Really? Okay, cool. Let's listen to it for like a couple of seconds.
It's nothing like what my show is like.
Okay, time's running out. Final question.
Is there an asteroid like about to hit the Earth?
No.
I had a dream about that the other night. It was horrifying.
Really?
Does it have
anything to do with the Iceland volcano eruption? Or?
No, that just makes me think I'm not going to get home in time to see my friend's band on Friday.
Okay. So stick with the question. When you're playing alone, you're never performing on stage except the tour with the big band that you mentioned before. How come that you always perform in the middle of the crowd?
Well, I want the show to be more like a party and less of like a concert where you're watching someone. I want the focus to be on people looking around them and the other people that are there, not like fixated at one point in the room. I feel like when people are watching, they tend to stand still more and feel less engaged, but when they can't see, they need to use their imagination more and just let the music drive them rather than the coercion of a leader. Does that make any sense?
Sure.
It's weird. I've noticed that in Europe and would people consider this Eastern Europe? Would this be Eastern Europe? I don't know where the line is.
It's a tricky question.
If you ask Slovenians,
they consider themselves Central Europeans.
Okay, Central Europeans. So
yeah,
sort of
but from the global point of view, this is Eastern Europe.
It's weird, like in the States, like Midwest is anything that's not the East Coast.
Okay.
So like,
something like that.
I've noticed that a lot of former communist nations have some people that are really opposed to like the activities and the group activities that I do. I'm phrasing this poor. I did this artist talk in Prague the other day, and I brought up how I do a lot of like group activities and theater type games during the set that involve the audience, and then they just brought up like the cultural difference between like the way an American views collectivism as opposed to someone who grew up in former communist collectivism, and how it can be perceived differently, and ever since then, which was just 2 days ago, but again, it seems like 1,000 years. I've just been thinking about it differently and trying to make the approach less enforcer-like and more like suggestive. Does that make any sense?
Sure. Why not?
Why not?
Okay, Dan, thank you.
Oh, no problem.
For the interview.
Anytime.
Take your time.
I'm glad that we've gotten to meet again. We met in 2007 in Vienna.
Cool. We'll meet again.
We'll meet again.
To je bil torej intervju z Danom Deaconom, ki nocoj skupaj s predskupino Klemar nastopi v klubu K4. V Ljubljani koncert se začne, mislim, da ob 10. uri, ob 9. Se odprejo vrata K4, tako da upam, da se vidimo tam v čim večjem številu. Tole je bil Ereš intervju, pripravil sem ga Primož Vozer, pa lepo zdrav in slišanje do naslednjič.
Interview Radio Student.